Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Most of us are aware of how libraries have changed over the years. While they were once just a place to borrow books, read, and do research, they have evolved into something more like community centers, offering a wide variety of services as well as sources of information. That's abundantly clear at the newly renovated Central Library in downtown St. Louis. The library reopened yesterday after a $70 million, two-and-a-half-year facelift. Joining me to talk about this new facility are Waller McGuire, Library Executive Director, and Project Architect George Nikolayevich of Canon Design. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us, and congratulations. What a great day it was yesterday.
Good morning, Don. Thank you. It was a joy.
I'll bet it was. Wally, you said you had 3,000 people there yesterday. Give me some sense of what they were saying about the building.
I had a board member ask me whether I felt like I was delivering a baby. You can understand I was a little nervous, but it was a pleasure from beginning to end. People were excited and happy. I walked in and found a woman crying in the Great Hall because she was just overwhelmed to be back. Kids everywhere. We had people walk right in and start researching. We had people carrying out armloads of books and finding new spaces and discovering old ones. It was wonderful from beginning to end. It was exhausting, but it was wonderful.
And George, I'm sure you must have been very, very proud of not only the turnout, but what it looks like right now.
Yes, indeed. My colleagues and I are very proud, and it was an amazing thing to touch something that Cass Gilbert designed, and hopefully people will like it.
Well, you know, Cass Gilbert, of course, was the original architect of the building. I was surprised to learn that, and I should have known this as long as I've been in St. Louis, surprised to learn that he also designed the art museum.
He did. He did design the art museum, and he did a Woolworth building in New York, capital of Minnesota in St. Paul, I believe, and maybe even, I think, Supreme Court.
He did, the Supreme Court building and the West Virginia state capitol.
Yes.
But I'd argue our building were better than almost any of those except maybe the Woolworth.
Right. It was extremely hardworking and talented man that gave a lot to America.
Give me some sense of what it's like for someone like you to come in here and, quote, improve the work of someone as renowned as Cass Gilbert.
Well, it's, it is humbling, and it's our hands were trembling a bit. Once you have something like that, the best thing is to touch the least, you know. But when you must, then you think hard what Cass Gilbert would think about and do. And so I have read a lot about Cass Gilbert and architecture at the time. And so you do the best, but you respect the man who did it.
Waller, what was going on leading to the decision to take on this project? I mean, obviously, we have a 100-year-old building. What were you seeing that made you say, we got to make some changes here?
Well, we knew we had one of the world's great buildings. The staff, the public, St. Louis loved Central Library, but it was 100 years old. And aside from details like 100-year-old plumbing, and there was even a little bit of original wiring in the building, heaven help us. People do use libraries differently. There are new needs. One of the things you mentioned, our function is community centers, people coming in crowds and wanting places to meet and gather. People use libraries in new ways in terms of technology and in terms of the way they act in libraries. And so we knew that we not only needed to give the building new life in the sense that code and safety and just longevity meant we needed to work on the building, but we needed to make it a 21st century library as well. We couldn't just have a museum of architecture or a librarianship, which would have truly doomed the building. So we needed to kind of have a foot in both worlds there.
Can you give me some sense of how you and George would work together in the planning stages of this?
Canon brought a concept to us. We, of course, we're a public institution, and we go out for bid when we're looking for something as expensive as this job or nearly anything. And Canon came to us with a concept. We had a very strong idea of what we wanted, and that was part of the package we put out. And Canon actually came to us and said, you may want to reconsider this a little, and here is a different approach to new public spaces and new modern elements within the library, and that was a revelation for the board and for staff. And so we began with that relationship and with that concept of their having a strong idea to begin with and our thinking they were right.
George, however, there aren't too many projects like this I can't imagine that you've been involved in. I mean, the challenge must be significant.
Well, we do a lot of education buildings and healthcare buildings and things like that. And some of them are complex and intricate. This one was very complex. And the key to this project was to replace the existing stacks that were in the north wing, and they were independent structurally from the walls because of the fire codes and the earthquake and the things like that. Once that was taken down, the white, huge white space with the white tile revealed itself and almost gave us a license to continue with something that is slightly different than the rest of it. We did, of course, restore with many others that are involved on this project, the old part. You know, I like to say that architecture is collective sport. There were many talented people, and most of them from Midwest and St. Louis, that have touched that thing. So.
One of the challenges, I gather, also is initiating the new while maintaining as much of the old as you practically can.
Yes, in the old part, the grand hall and the entrance, there were times where the only thing that was needed, cleaning it up. And there are times that significant amount of restoration of the paint and the wood and the brass was needed. In the north wing, where we inserted, again, another building within the building. And by the way, exposed the books on the upper levels to kind of remind people of Cass Gilbert's ideas that the books there. We tried to use some of the materials that were from that part. To most notable is the glass planks, glass floor pieces from the stacks we used behind the reception desk and the things like that. Obviously, the white tile that was on the north wall in interior gave us an amazingly great background for interiors. You know, so we used a lot of old.
Waller, I gather from what George is saying that there were some surprises as this project unfolded.
Well, we tried very hard not to have surprises because surprises are expensive and a century-old masterpiece. So really, we've been working on this project, the library has, for well over a decade, doing research, and we even did excavation into the foundations and tested materials and so forth. So but yes, Canon sort of altered our approach. We were looking at the possibility of actually adding on to the back of the building, which is sort of the utilitarian part. And George and his team showed us that we could do what we wanted to do by opening up the stacks, and we would have the space that we need and the functions that we need without touching that gorgeous facade all the way around. I have to say the question you ask, there's this wonderful moment George created where one walks up through the Great Hall, which is one of the grandest spaces in the United States with its beautiful arched windows and the gilded ceiling and the chandeliers and the beautiful floor. And now one steps through this original entryway and into the modern section, the original stack tower, and one is in this explosion of light and windows and space and airiness in the 21st century. It's an analogy for what libraries do, a physical representation of what libraries are right now, with one foot in the past and the monumental and one foot in looking forward. And that's a wonderful experience for a librarian to have that built into your building.
I should point out to our listeners, if you're by a computer, you can go to our website at stlpublicradio.org and go to the homepage there, and you'll be able to see a number of photographs of what we're talking about. You had a lot of people down there yesterday, but not everybody was there, and they might like to see what we're talking about. Waller, this was a $70 million project, and some people might be under the impression that this was tax dollars at work. Where did the money come from?
It's a combination. And actually, I had people on yesterday tell me, I can't believe that this was done for only $70 million. I know that's a lot of money. But in truth, it involves several buildings as well as moving out all of the materials and moving back in, which that alone cost several million. But it's a combination. The library is tax supported by the people of St. Louis, and we've taken out a bond issue, which you might think of as a mortgage that pays for much of it. So in truth, the taxpayers of St. Louis who use and support their library well are responsible for the majority of the money. But it really, in order to afford Central Library, which is a masterpiece and a very expensive building to work in, we needed a philanthropic aspect of the fundraising. So a foundation, the Library Foundation, took on a $20 million philanthropic goal, and they're very close to that. They're about $2 million away from succeeding.
I also have read that the auditorium is subject to naming rights. Is that correct? if somebody's got a few bucks, they can have it named after
that's
them?
That's right. If anyone wants to call or anyone would be interested in that, it's a spectacular space. And yes, it is a naming opportunity. So I'd love to talk to anyone about that.
And what would it cost to have your name affixed to the auditorium?
$3 million. And when you see it, you'll understand it's a bargain at the price.
All right. Well, George, what would it cost to build that building today in its present state, do you think?
Oh, I don't want to guess that. When you say present state, you mean all the intricate old part and the details?
Yeah, with the building as it exists right now, if you were to build it and make it just as it is today.
I hate to guess, but, compared to the most complex buildings, which are laboratories, for example, somebody will call now and say, George, you're wrong. But I wouldn't be surprised if it has to be 500 per square foot, 600 per square foot, because the details that Cass Gilbert and craftsmen at the time, they are extremely tough to do, and replicate. I really wonder if it can be replicated without looking kind of fake,
Sure. And we're talking 190,000 square feet. Is that the figure?
Almost 200,000.
You couldn't do it for $70 million, that's for sure.
Well, libraries all across the country, cities all across the country have reworked, rebuilt, or built a new central library, San Francisco and Chicago and Seattle and Dallas, on and on and on, and they spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not unusual to have a city spend $300 million. We have a better library than any of those at a bargain price, and it's because of the gift of St. Louis of 100 years ago.
That's Walter McGuire. He is the executive director of our St. Louis Library. And we're talking about the newly renovated library, which opened yesterday after 2.5 years and $70 million. Also with me in studio is the project architect George Nikolayevich of Canon Design, one of several who were involved in bringing this thing to reality. And a beautiful building it is. I'll remind our listeners once again that you can take a look at numerous pictures of this central library downtown at stlpublicradio.org. We'll come back and continue our conversation. We'd love to bring you into it as well. What are your recollections of the Central Library before this renovation, and what do you want or need in a 21st century library? We'd love to hear from you. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet at STL on Air or reach us through Facebook. We'll be back with Walter McGuire and George Nikolayevich in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about the reopening of the Central Library downtown, the $70 million project. 2.5 years in the making. It opened yesterday, as I have indicated. And with me in studio is Walter McGuire, the Library Executive Director, and George Nikolayevich of Custom Design, the project architect. Walter, what are some of the things that people are able to do now in this library that they were unable to do prior to yesterday?
One of the things that we needed to do was put in a new network. There are miles and miles and miles of fiber optics and very powerful systems. And what I'm told is one of the best wireless networks in St. Louis. More and more people come to us now and they want to interact with the library with their smartphone. they pull, in effect, their computer out of their pocket. And so Central has an enormously powerful network, which we're still finding our way around. We've got new learning spaces involved with technology. We have a really interesting space on the first floor designed to introduce people to new forms of technology and let them learn things about recording music or videos or web design and some other pieces. People come to us in new ways. We're finding that the internet has, rather than driving people away from libraries, has actually brought more people to us. They find the tools and the possibilities and the resources that libraries have online. I met a couple at the grand opening yesterday who are from Pittsburgh and had found out about the library's opening online and had researched the library's genealogy collection. And so we had a couple from Pittsburgh at our grand opening, and they were working in the genealogy library before we closed our doors. So it's a new world in a lot of different ways.
You know, you can't walk into a modern library, and we certainly have a number of them around here, without seeing the computer bays just filled with people almost 24/7. It's just they're very, very active, aren't they?
When I started at the library, there were very few computers at the St. Louis Public Library, and I haven't been there that long. 20 years ago, there were virtually none. Now we have almost 1,000 public computers.
Wow.
Throughout the system. We're throughout the city, and that doesn't include the hundreds of people who bring in their own laptops and use our network to go out and research the world and work with us. So, yes, it's a transformation just like it's transformed shopping and banking and everything else.
And, George, doesn't this create yet another kind of challenge for you, because you're not only looking at this library in terms of the present but also the future and having to, I guess, anticipate some of the things that might be down the road?
Well, yes, we do. And our colleagues, engineers, in this case, Tao Associates, did a wonderful job. And others, and we too, anticipate. And to describe that is, you know, as we say often, opening up the opportunity for future change is always a good idea, be that physical, in the physical sense, architecture, or in the case of technology.
We have already started to get some calls, and let's get the audience into this conversation as quickly as we can. And we'll begin by bringing in Elaine, who is calling from St. Louis. Elaine, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. I wanted to give you a little historical note about the original library. There was a steel worker by the name of William Brown, Bill Brown, who was working on the building and saving every dollar he could. And the steel erection company that was building the library when I went bankrupt, and he bought it for a song almost, and that man was the person who established Ben Hur Steel, which is still here in St. Louis and still run by William Brown, who is president of it today, and the family's very involved in philanthropy in the area and around the world, and it's just a neat story that they're still here.
Well, thank you so much for the call. Is this ringing any bells with either of you gentlemen?
Well, let me say that he did a good job, because the steel in that building is massive and will hold it there easily for another century. And it's something that George and his team had to work around, that massive steel. It was also a pleasure, a benefit, because it let them open up the huge new rooms and what were workspaces of the library. So Mr. Brown and the early part of Ben Hur did a wonderful job. They also used Carnegie steel. So Mr. Carnegie gave us $1 million, but I don't know how much of it he earned back by floating all of that steel in from Pittsburgh.
And how did that affect your work, George?
Well, the dealing with the steel that BSI, the construction company, had to bring through the windows, narrow windows, and build, really building within the building, was an amazing thing. But what the lady that called, says really that the story of library is bigger than architecture. There's so many destinies that were part of it, and it will be in the future. That is really kind of great.
Speaking of, we'll talk about the future, but I think we can also talk about the past when we bring Pam into the conversation. Pam, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to ask, I worked in that building, and it was one of my first jobs, 1968, 69, And I remember how amazing the pneumatic tubes were that were behind the circulation desk. And I was wondering if they're still there. And also, I know that the stacks have been reworked because of potential fire hazard, but it was remarkable how they had glass floors, glass block floors, so that the light would, you know, come through each level. It's an amazing building. I love it.
Well, I hope you still will. It's true. You'll find the stacks completely changed. They were an amazing space. I always thought it was like what a fish in an aquarium may feel like to walk through that space in the glass floors. They had to be completely altered. We did keep pieces of the glass, and they're actually walls made out of that huge, thick floor glass. I have to tell you that the pneumatic system, which the library's maintenance department struggled with mightily for many years, they actually had to invent pieces to keep that running. It is gone, but we kept the beautiful brass tubing. One used to ask for a book at the desk, and they'd send a little pneumatic holder up to the levels of the stack, and the runners would grab it and pull the book and run it down the book elevators.
Right. Well,
now I'm afraid we have to have more cost-effective and more sort of efficient ways of doing that. So there is a change, but we did keep the vestiges of that really remarkable early technology.
George, as the architect, were you 100% in favor of keeping some of these relics of the past, if you will?
Yes. This is a very interesting point about stacks. They were close to the public. However, they were amazingly modern and forward-looking at the time. And even today, if I would design glass floors like that, it would be stunning. So what the lesson there is for me is that architects try to look to the future and try to move on from known, and I think Cass Gilbert in many ways was doing that.
And that's exactly what you have to do in a project like this yourself.
You have to, yes. Yeah. You have to move on. There's always a dilemma, you know, how far you go, but you have to move on, yes.
Yeah. And Waller, are you part of the conversation when this is going on? I mean, how closely aligned are you to this whole process step by step?
I was pretty closely aligned, Don. I've worked with a lot of architects over the years, and it's been a pleasure. Cannon was a particular joy, but I have to say I have pretty strong opinions, and it's important that a library work as a library, and so someone who's worked in it for a lifetime, I think, is the voice that needs to be heard. And Cannon listened, which was a joy. I've seen some other major projects in which the staff clearly felt that the architect had not listened to the library, and I think they're paying the price now. Anything that goes wrong in that building is my fault because Cannon listened.
Well, you've had some experience along these lines. I mean, you've involved renovations elsewhere in the city, have you not?
We do. The library actually started with the branch system out in the neighborhoods, and so that was my responsibility. I was deputy director before I was director, and so I had the privilege of working with those beautiful little libraries we have that are very much part of their neighborhoods, and they're different. All of our branches are different, and they reflect their community. So some experience, but nothing like this. This was a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
I live very close to the Schlafly Branch Library.
Oh, and, pretty one.
Yeah, it's a pretty one, and it's a great facility. I can't speak enough about libraries in the city and also in the county. Everybody's doing a great job in these institutions.
George? You know, there was a great Scottish architect, Ralph Erskine, who said that the client is like a brick or a concrete. If it fails, the building fails. And architects know that the clients play a significant role, that they should, but not all the clients are the same.
Yeah.
In this case, Waller had a significant instinct for architecture. This, I don't want this to be gratuitous, but it made a significant contribution to the result.
I hope that Pam comes back and loves what she sees. I mean, it was fun to talk to people who have had a history of the library, have used it for years, patrons and staff, and I hope she loves what she sees.
I'm sure she'll be back. Let's take Steve's call. He's calling from Baldwin. Steve, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Well, hi. I live in West County, and I have no idea where this building is. I'd love to see it. So maybe you could tell me where it is. And also, I was wondering if my county library card would work at the at that library, or is that separate?
The county library and the city library, we are two different systems, and there are many different library systems in the county, not just the county library, but places like University City and Brentwood and some of the smaller libraries. But the county and the city many years ago entered into a very unique arrangement, which we actually won awards for, in which county libraries can use the city library and the city residents can use county library. And then we extended it to all the smaller libraries. So we'd love to have you come in, and you can't use the county card, but you can get a city card if you're a resident of the St. Louis County Library District, as well as so many of those smaller library districts as well. The library landscape of St. Louis is every bit as complicated as its political landscape, but there are wonderful libraries, as Don points out, throughout the area.
I have a new – go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. And where is the library?
We are on Olive Street. We take up the whole block between 13th and 14th by Soldiers Memorial. It's a beautiful part of the city. And believe me, when you you can drive in and come down 14th Street, you cannot miss it. It's a stunner of a building.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. I have an email here from Tom, who writes, all library experts are predicting that the rise of the Kindle and similar devices will lead to all libraries becoming websites, websites only, that is, within 5 years.
Actually, I don't think a lot of libraries are necessarily predicting that, although ebooks and downloaded materials are hugely important to us. They're very difficult for us in many ways, but you can go to our website or come into our buildings and download movies or music, and that is hugely popular, and it's growing in popularity. On the other hand, I often think technology is driving people into the library. Technology can be a very isolating experience, and libraries seem to be taking on a new role as a kind of community center and a gathering place and a place to exchange ideas and possibilities. And if he had been downtown yesterday and seen people grabbing books and clutching them and taking them out by the armload to check out, I believe the paper book, which is a wonderful and very powerful form, has a real future. But statistically, if someone starts using e-books or electronic books, they actually start using more paper books as well. It's the experience of reading, of learning, of engaging in a story that's powerful. So no matter how you do it, libraries are a part of that.
George, do you take any of this, again, into consideration? I mean, anticipating that there may at some point be fewer hardbound paper books in a library?
Well, I can't predict that. I remember 30 years ago when I came to the United States, there were all kinds of predictions made, and most of them never became true. Now, technology is important, but as for me, I mean, unless I can take a book and touch it, and I know a lot of people that do, it would be a sad thing to lose that from my point of view.
That's what I hear, and I'm sure you do, Walter, over and over again, that people like the idea of actually holding it in their hands, turning the pages, regardless of what the electronic books can make you feel like, think you're doing.
Something I hear over and over again, all librarians do, and I heard it again yesterday, was people walking in and saying, it smells like a library. There's something about the smell of a library that triggers memories, smell of books that triggers memories.
True. iPad doesn't smell as good as a book.
Right. All right. Back to the phones here. Let's bring in Dennis calling from Overland. Dennis, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, first of all, I'm looking forward to going down and seeing the library, but I would like to share an idea that I've had for a while, which is the two institutions that are under fire and have been dealing with this is libraries and post offices, and I think they're two of the greatest institutions the United States has evolved here. And maybe in the long term, maybe it's not as hard in the cities, but I think in some of the smaller towns of America, if we could figure out a way to maybe have these two institutions set up some sort of symbiotic relationship and thrive together and keep small town America going and maybe in the cities as well. Just a suggestion. I think we don't really value either one of these institutions and the people that work there as well as we should. So thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Well,
it's an interesting thought. I'm sure post offices are transformed even more than libraries have been. You know, one of the groups that I meet with is called the Missouri Public Library Directors, and that's the group of public library directors from across the state. And I have to say, the directors from small libraries out in rural communities or county communities or small town, they really are heroes. I have the resources of a staff and a city, and they are out there. It always amazes me. One moment they are reloading the mail server, and then they're mopping out the restrooms, and then they're dealing with patron complaints. And librarians are a passionate group, and those are important pieces of small towns and communities, and they do wonderful work, and they should be supported.
I think that another important thing about the library in America is it's egalitarian institution. And no matter who you are or how you look, you are welcome. It's sort of like a jazz and blues, you know. If you play well, doesn't matter who you are. That is the great thing.
That brings up another point that I want to get to after a break. A number of people are raising an issue that we'll take up as soon as we come back. We're talking about the renovated new Central Library downtown, newly renovated, I should say. With me in studio is Walter McGuire, the Library Executive Director, and George Nikolayevich of Canon Design, who was instrumental in bringing us this beautiful new building. Back to continue our conversation in just a moment. And again, we want more calls from you folks at 382-825. That's 382-TALK. Give us a call. Tell us your library memories or what you want or expect in a 21st century library. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation about the newly renovated Central Library downtown. Let's go right to the phones and bring in Paul calling from St. Louis. Paul, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, hello to you and your guests. When the library was opened before the renovation, it seemed like there was a real problem with the police dealing with the homeless in there. And I understand that isn't really the library's problem, but is that going to be addressed in some way with the new library? And I did take the tour yesterday.
Well, thank you for coming. It's a question I get. The Central Library, the St. Louis Public Library, we've really never had a serious incident, I would say. Our approach to homelessness is that we treat the homeless when they can be identified as we do any other patron, that they're required to operate by the same rules and the same procedures, and they have the same opportunities. It is, I have to say, and I appreciate your saying, you know, that it isn't the library's problem, but it's America's problem and it's the community's problem. I do believe that downtown, to some degree, is a dumping ground for communities who don't want poverty or illness in their own communities, and I think that's something other cities who do it should be deeply ashamed of. We handle it, I believe, well. We have staff to enforce and make sure that behavior within the library is as it should be, and as George points out, it's one place in the community where everyone can come in and sit down, and we do have rich and poor. We have educated and uneducated within our buildings, and one can feel safe and perhaps even learn something about one another. But yes, I do understand there is some fear and concern about meeting someone different than oneself or meeting the poor within a location. We have never experienced really any serious problems or incident, and we are always on guard to make sure that the library is used appropriately. We're not a social service agency. We're a public library, so that is our job. Many of the homeless whom I meet, and I do regularly, are veterans. And so, of course, we don't say that veterans of the armed forces can't use the library. We welcome everyone. We want them to improve their lives, but it needs to be used as a library. So that's how we deal with it. We're actually obligated by law to open our doors to everyone within our community. I think the library manages it, the staff manages it pretty well, and so we will be on the lookout to make certain that, that Central is used as it should be. I hope that that makes people comfortable and sort of answers the issue for many.
I guess there is a perception out there, Waller. However, we have an email here from Lloyd who continues this point. He says, I have small kids, and we'd visit the library when it was open. We had many issues with homeless in the bathroom and sleeping in different sections. I got to the point where I didn't feel it was as safe, and it was impossible to manage both kids when they had to use the bathroom.
I'd argue with that. It's always been our approach that we don't allow sleeping, we don't allow soliciting, we don't allow bad behavior in the library, and I really think that the staff was pretty good at it. Bathrooms, I have to say, librarians are a little obsessed with bathrooms. We have beautiful new facilities throughout the building, and we'll make sure that they are carefully monitored and kept clean. That the children's library, which is dedicated now to children, has its own facilities. And one problem I will say we had before that Canon solved for us is the only way one could get into the old Central Library at a ground level handicapped accessible entrance was through the children's library, and that made it a corridor and an entrance and very unfortunate. That's no longer true. So now when you walk into the children's library, you pass a sign that say more or less adults must be accompanied by a child. So we are making the children's library a sort of kingdom of children and a paradise for kids and their caregivers. But we've always had huge usership by children at the St. Louis Public Library. I believe your concerns are certainly legitimate at any public library, and any parent anywhere, whether you're in an expensive mall or anywhere, needs to be careful and conscious. But I believe that we work really hard to provide a safe and welcoming environment, and I hope that you'll agree when you come and visit us at Central Library.
Another email here. This one's a little bit off the wall, but let's take it anyway. There was a big article in the New York Times last week entitled It Was a Dark and Itchy Night about bedbug infestation in library books. You running into this kind of a problem?
It's true. It's happened in a couple of communities. Suddenly we started hearing about bed bugs in hotels in various places 10 years ago, and everyone was terrified and obsessed with it. We haven't experienced it here at the St. Louis Public Library. I know a couple of libraries and bookstores and other places that have. So we check materials for problems like that, and we haven't noticed any such problem.
George, Waller mentioned places for children. I know a lot of emphasis was placed by you folks at Canon on areas for young people. Tell us about them.
That was an interesting part of the library. That part of the building had to look different and feel different, obviously, because of kids. I mentioned before that architecture is collective sport. In this case, we worked with Deanna Kuhlman of Kuhlman Levitt, who is a wonderful graphic designer here in St. Louis of a national quality. And she worked with us. We worked together on making these things beautiful. So you have pictures on the wall. You have clouds in a ceiling. You have a furniture that is appropriate color. And so it's a little bit freer and a little bit more vibrant than in other places, in other wings of the library.
Yeah. Waller, do you have a lot, have you typically had a lot of traffic from young people? I mean, I remember as a kid myself, a long time ago, it was part of the process of growing up that you took field trips to libraries on regular occasions.
Yeah, we have a bus entrance at Central Library because before we closed and now more than ever, we'll have busloads of kids from schools arriving to visit the library, classes. We actually go out, of course, and take materials to schools throughout the city as well, but they come to us in crowds, and you would be amazed. It's funny. People think of downtown as a business district or a sort of problematic district, but if you walk through downtown, there's strollers everywhere. There are families and young kids and people who are eager to use Central as a sort of neighborhood library. And then we have parents who want to have a sort of family day. And that happened yesterday. Crowds of generations of people coming down and visiting and bringing kids. So the children's area was just packed yesterday. It was fun to watch.
What about parking?
Parking is always a challenge. People always ask about that. There's something about St. Louis in the Midwest. I don't think anybody would be satisfied unless they could drive up the steps and park in the Great Hall. But we have parking all around us. We don't have our own garage. So actually, that's probably something that we'll start looking at now. We are a city library, so we're not out in the country where you can just pave over a meadow and have acres of parking spaces. So people can still find us, but they're meters, and we're working to see if we can provide. We have a small lot for patrons, but it's still a challenge for us.
Well, George, 100 years from now, when you're involved in yet another redesign of the Central Library, you'll have to find a way to get that ramp into the Grand Hall for cars. All right. Now let's go back to the phones. A lot of callers here. We'll try to get as many in as we can in the time that's left. AJ in Florissant, you're up. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I went to Mizzou, and I know whenever exams rolled around, I'd be spending a lot of time in the library. It can get really stressful, and there was a lot of really cool things to be found in their library that would just that were, I don't know, it was just cool to take a break. I was able to find like an original copy of Sherlock Holmes, copies of Dante's Inferno from like the 1800s, like just old, really cool stuff. And I mean, it was nice to be able to take a break and just walk around and. Think people don't really, a lot of people don't realize that, like, I had no idea that there was, like, a special and rare book section at the library and some really cool stuff there.
We're an old library, one of the first public libraries west of the Mississippi, and so we have remarkable things. Some of them are rare in the sense of what you mentioned, rare books, beautiful and expensive and works of art, really. And beyond that, sort of normal everyday things have a way of becoming rare over the years. You can go back and find old business records or, for heaven's sakes, we have enormous cereals collections that run back into the 1700s that are full of fascinating, amazing things. You won't find those online anywhere. So, rare books are a specialized interest, but we have amazing things, and it's the benefit of being a library that's been in business for well over a century now.
George, one of the things that I notice, and I haven't been down there yet, but will be soon, and again, reminding our listeners that we have a number of photos on our website, stlpublicradio.org, was the increase in light. You've made tremendous use of light, it seems to me, in that building, beyond what it was.
Yes. Well, some of it was given to us, the North Wing, where the new atrium and the public spaces are, it's facing north. And north light is superb for a librarist. You have this indirect kind of a glow. And the windows, as you know, the north elevation has those long windows. We replaced all of that with the new windows, but with the respect to the details that Cass Gilbert had. And as a result, that light poured in. So even when you are in the old part, as you approach through the openings in the walls, the new part, you see that light coming in. And I would say, Waller, wouldn't you say that light even in the old part is just amazing?
I've worked in the building for 20 years, and something that stuns me is the views. The huge windows that Gilbert designed were covered with old Venetian blinds. All of those have been taken out, and we have new blinds that disappear up into the window jams. And so out of all of the rooms, you look out in the cities around you, the trees and the greenery and the Park Pacific building and the Peabody, you can see the arch. That's just amazing. And, of course, libraries live and die by light. And so one of the major challenges that we had for Canon was bringing light, new light fixtures and lighting throughout the building. They and Tao did a superb job of that and also made it very energy efficient because, of course, it's expensive to do. So new forms of LED lighting mean that the rooms just glow, really, truly. It's stunning.
Back to the phones. And Monroe is calling from St. Louis and has been waiting patiently. Go ahead, Monroe.
Hello, Don. And I would like to congratulate all your guests for their successful completion of this project. excuse me, I have a slight cold. I had the pleasure of serving on the Kirkwood Library Board and as state chairman of the Missouri Library Trustee Association. Back when we consolidated the 9 municipal libraries onto one computer, which allowed us to cooperate with the city.
Yes.
And one of the things that I will say is back then there were a lot of naysayers who were concerned about a lot of the book big box bookstores that were going to be our competition, that were going to end libraries. I think we've survived at least one of them, and the other one is not doing as well as a lot of the libraries that we've come across.
Bookstores, we have relationships with a lot of bookstores here in the city, like Left Bank, and Don mentioned our Schlafly branch. It's very close to Left Bank Books, and then there's another Left Bank's right downtown. And actually something that we see, and I believe bookstores do as well, is both of us do better when the other one is nearby. People love to read, love books, and they love to own them, and they love to check them out. I love buying books, but the great thing about a library is we'll take care of them. You know, whenever I move, I don't have to move a million pounds of books. So a combination of using both is really powerful, and we help one another. We don't hurt one another.
Thanks for the call, Monroe. Let's bring in Melanie from Webster Groves. Go ahead, Melanie.
I'm so excited to hear about the renovations at the library. I just have a quick story to share, and it's that 13 years ago, my husband and I were married across the street at Christ Church Cathedral, and we had the privilege of being using the library stairs and just that beautiful facade for many of our photos that we had outside with our bridal party, and I have that as a memory, and I have that in my photo album from our wedding, and it's just such a lovely thing. I'm excited to get down there.
We have a lot of people asking or wanting to take pictures in the library, and we've allowed it. Yesterday, it was funny. The camera flashes everywhere, and there are thousands of pictures up on Facebook already. And I have to say, we had this ceremony on the front steps where we unwrapped Central Library. We had a crowd of patrons and kids and adults and politicians who pulled on the ribbon's end, and this huge crowd that they really looked like they were unwrapping a Christmas present. But the cathedral, the Christ Church Cathedral right across 13th Street, let out a peal of bells just for our opening that just – it got caught in my throat. It was just – they're such great neighbors, and Mike Kinman down there and the whole congregation. So we're a neighborhood, and the cathedral is an important part of our life.
Another pretty good piece of architecture in Christ Church Cathedral, George.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And the shell building, too. The whole context there looks like a really cosmopolitan, great place.
Time's getting away, but I want to bring in Susan calling from Illinois. Susan, thanks for being with us, but time's getting away.
Okay, thanks to all of you. There used to be a head of Mark Twain near the entrance, and I wondered if there are heads or busts of other writers, other authors from the St. Louis area, including Kate Chopin.
The Mark Twain bust is back. That's a story in and of itself. It was a gift to the St. Louis Public Library by Mussolini, Italy's Mussolini in the 30s. And there's a long story behind that we can't get into. But the Central Library is a book in stone. There are a number of busts, and we brought many of the pieces of artwork back. But what we tried to do was carve authors and phrases and stories into the building. And so there were originally, when it was built in 1912, and when you come back again in 2012, patrons have suggested favorite lines that are carved throughout the building. And that's the artwork we've tried to bring back in. But you'll see Mr. Twain in that wonderful bust, still spotless and beautiful as ever.
Have any Kate Chopin?
Well, of course, we've got the books. I don't have a bust. I do not.
Thanks so much for the call. We have a call from Jerry in O'Fallon. Unfortunately, we don't have time to take it, but I know he wants to talk about the inspirational quality of a library in the minute we have left, Waller and George. Comment on that, how libraries can be inspirational.
The great windows, the spaces, the height of the original building, the height of the space that George has created, the light that floods in, the light that shows on the books and the titles. It is – and the fact of being part of a community, part of a city, part of a greater organization than just oneself. Yes, public libraries are inspiring places, and it's one of the reasons people come to us when they could work at home.
And George, in 30 seconds?
Building should be inspiring. I would not add anything more than what Waller had to say. It was well said.
Well, we'll leave it at that. And Jerry and O'Fallon, sorry we couldn't take your actual call, but I hope that response was kind of what you were looking for. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been an interesting conversation. Congratulations to both of you for another 100 years of a beautiful building, and we appreciate the time you spent with us today.
Thanks so much, Don.
George Nikiewicz and Walter McGuire, thank you so much. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the Del Mar Divide and its role as an economic and racial dividing line in St. Louis. Is it real or imagined? Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.